A small Norfolk-based charity has been tackling poverty through education in northern Ghana, Africa, since 1994. The project has built schools and given 500,000 children the chance to gain an education. It's entirely run by volunteers. The charity is called the Walugu Project. It all started at a science conference in Japan, when science teacher Lynn Simons from Heatherset became interested to help. Carolyn meets Lynn to find out more.
Lynn, thank you very much for taking the time this afternoon to talk to me about the fascinating project you're involved in and charity you set up in northern Ghana.
Yes, that's right.
It's been going a lot for a while now.
Yes, it has, Carolyn. Charity is set up here and works with some of the most deprived people in Africa, in northern Ghana, and it's a partnership. Mm-hmm. So it's a two-way thing, based both here and in northern Ghana. And it's been going for just over 25 years now.
Called the Walugu Project?
Yes, well done. The Walugu Project, that's called named after the first school that we helped. We're basically, long story, helping with education, particularly girls and women, bringing girls back from slavery, etc. Mm. And when we needed to set up a charity, we needed a name, and I wasn't feeling very bright that day, and I chose the name of the school. Now, we can't change it because we're well known, but actually it's a name no one can remember. So Walugu Project, everyone listening, remember that one.
Mm-hmm. And I understand it came about by chance, not even in Norfolk and not even in Ghana.
No, I was in Japan looking. I was always been very interested in international science education. Science education is what I do, it's my passion. But I was very lucky to be on a sponsored trip in Japan to look at their education system with people from other parts of the world, and to make suggestions to the government there about education. So that wasn't mm-hmm. that a lucky thing. And one day I was standing outside the Diet, which is the parliament in Japan, waiting to speak to some MP or other. And I got talking to one of the African people, because there were a lot of people, and he was from Ghana. And that's where it started. His name was Karimuna Jina. And he told me he was very sad because another one of his girls in his school had died last week. And he knew I taught in school, and he said, "How do you feel when your girls die in your school?" And I went, "What?" And that it started from there, when we learned of the lack of history of education in schools in northern Ghana, particularly for girls. And Karamu had decided, against all the odds, to set up a secondary school. This was almost unheard of, and to encourage girls to come to school. He'd done that bit. But then he realised girls had to travel because they were from outer villages, and there was nowhere for them to live safely, and they had to board in village houses. And there they were being often taken in as extra wives. You know, this is a society so different from ours, it's difficult to explain it. Mm. And there were too many back mud hut abortions going on. So, long story, we helped him build a hostel for girls and for his girl teachers. That hostel is still open now with 120 girls. But there are many, many more. And that school that only had 80 children to begin with has now got nearly 2,000.
Gosh.
Walugu school.
So you came home and started raising money immediately?
I came home and started really just to write to my friend. And then we started his girls writing to my girls in my school. I was teaching at Old Hall at the time. And one of my girls one day had a letter saying, "Have you got any books in your school to throw away? Because we don't have any books in our school." So that was another sit up and take deep breath moment. So it was so easy to get books, because schools don't throw away so many. Mm-hmm. And a local businessman, Barry Brooks, worked at Little Melton, paid for transport. And that became the Lynn Simons Library. And then more money was raised, and then the hostel for girls was open, etc. And things have snowballed.
And snowballed from there.
Snowballed, yeah.
So tell me about what you've been involved in since. It's pretty broad.
Yeah. Well, Karen, really what happened, it's probably the biggest, I did visit Ghana, I'd never been, and a group called Science in the Developing World paid for me to go and look, and I was gobsmacked. I'd never been in Africa before. Absolutely, I wasn't prepared for such difficult circumstances. No toilets anywhere, in fact, no anything. anywhere. Very, very difficult and dangerous living conditions, but lovely people. And I came back from that, and we talked together about linking more schools. Mm. And then I had an invitation one day from the chief of the main tribe in Northern Ghana, the Mamprusi people, a million people, saying that we want to make you a chief. Now, I knew that chiefs were, there are village chiefs, there are all sorts of chiefs, and they were very important. And I thought that was ludicrous. White woman, chief of a strong black tribe in Northern Ghana, said, no, don't be, no, we can't do that. But they very, very clever people, survival of the fittest, you know, remote places, mm-hmm. said, well, if you do, it'll help get publicity and it'll help us and help you with your work to help us. And boy, did it work. That's a huge ceremony.
How did it work?
It worked because all the world media wanted to travel with me. We just took one guy from the Times, one of their chief reporters and photographers, and that was to get the pictures on the front page of the Times on the day I was enskinned.
When was that?
1996. And it really did go worldwide, on just everywhere. And for a little while, it carried on. It did help us to make contacts. So these wise people had done the right thing. And being a chief has lots of responsibilities. Mm-hmm. But in a way, I try not to take that too seriously, but it's very ceremonial. When I'm there, I have to behave regally.
Mm-hmm. And what are some of the just a few of the responsibilities, I'm sure, of being the first and
the
only...
The first white woman, tribal chief. Well, it gives me responsibility, it gives me status, so that I'm listened to. I'm never really quite sure about that. I'm asked for my ideas and thoughts, and I think that perhaps they're just being kind to me, because they know now that we care about each other. We're very in a reciprocal relationship. Mm. I'm chief now of another two tribes, but that's another story.
Yeah. So initially, being in touch with the chief, was he the intermediary that helped decide where to target projects, or is that how it worked?
No, this guy, Professor Nabila, who is very, very important chief, really knew that he knew people in the north and knew they would work with me. And we have have developed over the years a team of the most amazing, amazing African people right across the north of Ghana. Because it's a big and difficult to travel in region. And they work with the people. They identify what's most needed. Then they talk to us about it. And together we decide what we might possibly be able to do. And then hopefully we fundraise. And this way of working in absolute trust and mutual respect really knocks the spots off other charities. Now I'm boasting, but I mean it.
Mm-hmm.
Because we don't have anything to do with corruption.
Mm-hmm.
Of course we know about corruption. I know things about corruption that I wouldn't begin to talk about. But we don't do it. So 99% of our income in the last year was spent on projects, because nobody's paid.
You're all volunteers.
All volunteers. And that's unusual for Africans to be volunteering when they're in poverty. When they've seen all of the charities with their big offices and big cars and paid people out there, must be tough for them.
Mm-hmm.
But they actually do this with a very good heart, and what they've achieved is amazing. It makes me sit up and think, you know, how have we managed to do this over the years?
Mm-hmm.
And it is because of mutual trust and respect, and long may it last.
Mm.
It's precious, isn't it?
It's very precious.
Which is why you're here talking to me
today,
so I can talk
absolutely.
To local people.
I mean,
about
to
us.
Have a local charity in Norfolk with a tribal chief as their head. Are you you're the senior member?
I'm the founder of the Woolagoo Project. Yeah. We now have obviously a well established committee with tremendous people, tremendous treasurer and chair, and people who've just. If anybody wants to help us, give me a ring, you know.
Yeah.
There's always jobs to do.
What sort of help are you looking for at the moment?
Well, sometimes it's very boring, just admin, writing letters, just reviewing our progress, coming along, maybe helping us make decisions.
Mm-hmm.
People have all sorts of experiences, don't they?
Absolutely.
We're very open to to sharing and learning from other people.
How often do you get out to Ghana?
Well, currently,
not at all, yes. That might.
And we did go just before lockdown, but it's very expensive and it's also very dangerous. Easy travel. It's not just disease when there are no medics. The terrain is very, very dangerous and difficult. And increasingly there are bandits coming over from other countries. It's not easy, but it's worthwhile. And again, if anybody wants to go and see it, we won't pay for them to go, but if you go there, your eyes will be opened in a way they wouldn't be in many other parts of the world.
Are you respected by the government departments? Yes.
I've learned a lot about politics. We work with local government, but we also work separate from them, so that our team spends the money on exactly what the money is intended for, and spend it wisely and quickly. Local government and local education people and national government are very, very grateful for our intervention, but they also work with the larger charities, which probably has more advantages for them. Working with us doesn't give anybody any personal advantages apart from knowing that they're doing good things.
And initially it started with primary schools, and then went on from there?
Yes, Carolyn. Initially there weren't many girls even in primary education, but our man Caribou had started a secondary school, which was unique. But now, here we are, all these years later, and just about all the girls are in school at primary level. We've still got, we're still battling to build the schools to get the next level, which is junior high to 15, and then to senior high, but we're doing well. But there was also a big gap we found, that for a lot of girls who've never been to school and reached, you know, teenagers and even early 20s with no education. And we were asked to help with vocational training for girls. And we've since, the first vocational training school for girls we built in Wally Wally, and it had about 40 girls. And that school now has got about 1,200 students doing learning to read and write, and things like entrepreneurship and family and healthcare. And isn't that important?
Absolutely.
But also a locally marketable skill, such as catering, dressmaking. They love hairdressing. They always want to make my hair straight because it's very curly when I go out there. And now IT skills, computer skills, and other skills are coming into the vocational training schools. They're very successful, but very expensive to run, because practical materials are very expensive. I'm trying to raise money now for a new roof at one of our vocational schools, at a place called Savalugu. That one's been open now for 15 years, but the roof has begun to collapse. If we lose the roof, we lose the whole school, and we lose all those hundreds of girls training in there. Until we can get a roof, I've put an appeal in on Saturday, which was sadly rejected already, but my headache today is to raise £9,000 for a roof at a vocational school. It doesn't sound glamorous, but it's life-saving in a bigger way than directly helping with things like water that we do, because it's long-term. The mothers have education, mothers with education send their girls to school, girls that go to school are healthier, families are smaller. And that's really important.
And they marry later.
Yes, they do.
And produce less.
Choose their husbands. They're not betrothed when they're born. And as tradition has been, they get married as soon as they menstruate and start having babies and live. It's a polygamous society. It's got lots of good things about it. It's easy to be critical, but that's just the way it is.
And was there any initial resistance in communities to providing education for girls?
Yes, because we're changing history, we're changing tradition. And one of the first places I went to was a meeting with the PTA, who were asking me how they could get girls into their school. This was a senior school in northern Ghana. And all of the PTA were men, of course. And I just said to them, well, how many women have you got on your... We can't have women on our committee. Right? It's break, but it's we can't break. We would never try and break that down. I would never tell people what to do.
Mm.
We maybe help them see or find out what each other are doing, working together, so everybody gets the self-esteem and knows that they're working in the right direction.
But girls are often seen as another economic pair of hands to help,
yes,
in the fields, aren't
and
they?
We were worried about that when lockdown happened, because the schools all shut down, obviously.
Mm.
And we were very worried that the girls would be returned to the traditional farming and get married. But this has happened right across Africa and many other parts of the world. But in fact, that's not really happened as much as we were concerned about. And in a way, they've come out of lockdown. We've been building boreholes during lockdown so people don't die of infected water because they all drink out the same muddy puddle.
Yes.
So in a way, that's one example. Lockdown has been, as it has for us in some ways, helped a bit. I know that sounds really, really odd.
No, I don't think so.
One of the disadvantages has been, of course, that schools and hostels for girls, which we do, haven't been maintained. And we're talking about sub-Saharan dust, wind and rain.
Ah.
And that's worrying us a little bit now. We can't fix everything, but we're currently working on some of the schools that most need fixing, in not just the most economical way, the way in which they last a long time. It's no good building a building cheaply.
Mm-hmm.
You need it to last and be there for many, many years.
And you've managed to build a well?
We drill boreholes.
And you've managed about 50.
We've done 50, just about, actually.
Gosh.
These are in places that haven't been drilled before. And we've done it, started by Wyndham Rotary, paid for the first one, bless them, had great faith in us.
Yes.
We weren't sure what we were doing, but we knew it was needed. Cost just under £4,000 to drill a borehole that's mechanised.
And do you need a geologist to do surveys
well,
and
yes,
find
all of that
where
done,
the water
there are,
is?
There are drilling companies that we use. We don't have our team. You know, our team, we employ builders, obviously. We don't pay anybody. We pay the builders and we pay the drilling teams, because you can't do that unless you do it really professionally with everything, all records kept properly and people being fully accountable.
Yes.
Yeah, we've really learned and it works.
Mm.
And even if these boreholes only last for a year, we worked out it costs some ridiculous amount per person help, something like a couple of pounds or something. But they have to be... they have to be electrical, because otherwise they can't get down deep enough.
Yes.
But the communities are paying and have put electricity into the regions. Everybody's working together on that.
And otherwise, how far generally would... I bet it was a woman who was going to get the water.
Yes, and the girls.
Yes, the girls. Mm-hmm. How far generally would they need to walk if they hadn't got a...
Particularly as COVID came along, a very, very long way, in fact. They were going maybe 10 miles...
Gosh.
And traditionally, they'd go for water before school, girls before school, and when they came back from school as well, and carry it on their heads. You've seen those photos.
Yes.
So, actually, again, this is another way in which the boreholes have helped, because water is available more locally, and therefore the girls and women aren't spending half a day trudging in amazing heat with a bowl of water on their head.
Mm. And they're less exhausted and can apply themselves with their studies.
Yes, the studies and... You know, the women going to wells, traditionally, it's a good place to meet, but when it's so far away, and they had to go further away to get the actual clean water, because traditionally they've had a muddy puddle, really, basically, a big muddy puddle, wash their clothes, put the waste material into that shed for drinking and cooking. And when COVID was first around, people there were actually probably as worried as we were, probably perhaps more, because they knew... that they had no protection. They didn't have.
Mm.
Although they knew about masks, they told us about making masks before we knew about it.
Mm.
Girls in our vocational schools made them for people. But they were very concerned about themselves and their families. And they're very caring people.
Mm. And I understand they're particularly talented with textiles and weaving.
Yes. In an area where there's nothing, there is nothing, really. And you know, even food's really hard come by. One of the things that they can do is grow cotton and weave and spin and dye and make beautiful cloths.
And do the boys get involved in that?
Yes, the boys do. You know, particularly younger boys in the villages. They have long looms.
And they've got lovely nimble fingers.
Yes, they have got nimble fingers. But traditionally, the men have done all of the tailoring, just as they did here in UK, didn't they?
Mm.
But now the girls are doing quite a lot of tailoring. And that's really important because it gives an income. And that costs us money too, though. We have these courses in our vocational schools, so we need to buy the materials all the time. There's a never-ending need. It's very cheap to teach theory,
yes,
but it's not cheap to teach practical.
And do they use natural dyes that they'll find in the environment?
They do, but also they use dyes from that they can buy from the market in the city. No, that's happening more. It's bound to happen, isn't it? Mm. Progress, I think.
Lynn, thank you so much for giving us a flavour of your local Wulugu project. It's been fascinating.
Thank you. I'm sorry I've got a croaky throat today.
No.
And that I talk far too quickly. But there you go.
No, it's fine.
Carolyn was talking to Lynn Simons. For more information, visit the website www.wulugu.co.uk, and Wulugu is WULUGU.